But it's one of those changes on the first read that makes you like, oh crap, got to pump the brakes.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beale Bella Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
No, hey.
This week, we got to talk about demons. Like, one of the core things about Warhammer 40,000.
One of the coolest bits as well. Like, the Pantheon is like the cornerstone of cool.
Did you say the cornerstone?
The cornerstorm, yeah. How poignant.
There are Codex is up for pre-order by the time you're hearing this, and it's got some different things in here. Some units, of course, you know, just kind of shift around, I think. But one of the things here is that if you dig on the particular brand or faction, I think you're going to be pleased, because it's like everything got some love. Now, Bellicor's in here. You know, people like Bellicor. And, you know, we'll talk about how that all got spread around. I do want to mention, I mentioned that, you know, talk about the Mechanicum in Horus Heresy. And I put together a list, played, you know, got a game in with the Mechanicum, played against World Eaters, and I rolled really well. So I don't know how great of a test it was. But it's basically like everything that got shot connected. Took out a Fire Raptor with Hunter Killer missiles. So I may be one of the few people on Earth who have actually connected now. It only took me, you know, what, 100 years to do it. I am on record saying that I've hit with a Hunter Killer missile, and it did something.
It's a beautiful day.
Yeah. Should have ran out and bought a lottery ticket or something.
Was this, so with this AdMech, was this kind of like what I'd mentioned before? Did you have the mechanical robot monster things, or what was your kind of your list build?
I did. I took I don't have one of the ones like the Magos that floats on the dais. So I just kind of, I took a combination of what I have painted. That was it. So again, I don't want to claim this is like the optimized list or whatever, but I took a Dominus and a Magos Prime. I took a couple of units of Thalax. With the weapons, with the lightning guns with the chain bayonets on them, and then some of the Silax Guardians, and then three armored conveyors, the Trier's armored conveyors. Those things are very good. I felt like I got a lot of use out of them. They're 135 points or something each. You got a couple of Volkite guns on them, and then a twin-linked bolt gun on there, and then the Hunter Killer missiles. They got a flare shield. They got a lot going for them, and they hold 22 models inside. So, you know, pretty good times. And you know, they allowed me to kind of castle up if I needed to. Took a Thanatar with the plasma mortar on its shoulder. Turns out,
a plasma mortar.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a big robot. It's probably the size of a like a Redemptor dreadnought, except it has this more plasma, big old plasma, probably. I don't know, the size of a 50-cent piece, you know, in diameter on it.
It's pretty awesome looking.
So, like, it doesn't need line of sight, or what? What's the mortar part of it?
Yeah, that's it. And it could fire, and it's got a rule called breaching that if you roll... So, this is something I did not actually realize during the course of the game, because you're, you know, still getting used to it. But the breaching rule is that if you roll... Breaching, it has a number in brackets, and that number in brackets is that if on the roll to wound, if you meet or exceed that number, then you get some extra AP. So on a 4+, this thing is AP 2 on the wound, and it fires a large blast.
Oh, so if you roll high enough, bye-bye Terminators?
Yeah, AP 2 doing, you know, you're getting a lot of hits because of the diameter of the blast, and it's pretty good, and I enjoyed using that, especially again when you were rolling hot. And then I took a couple of Ursarax units. These are the robots with the jump packs, and they're close combat. They're initiative 2, which is kind of a problem, but they have a lot of wounds and a decent armor save, so you're probably going to get to swing even if you lose out on initiative. Didn't want to be charging into Angron. Turns out I didn't have to. Tell you why in a second. I also took an Atropos, which is the knight with the, like the big, well, it's got the singularity cannon of what it is, but it fires a really bad shot, really powerful shot. And that's kind of what happened. The first time I shot it, immobilized the Dreadclaw on the other side of the table, put a hole point on the Lanerator. The second time I shot it, is actually has a rule that every time you shoot it, you roll to see if it's like a normal shot or potentially a vortex shot or a shot that also hurts yourself but still fires. And on the second shot, I got the vortex thing. I know I'm saying a lot of words here, but you fire a 5-inch large blast template and it stays on the table and becomes like it blocks line of sight. It stays on the table and hurts anything in it. But I also immobilized the Lanerator on that shot. And so the Lanerator basically just sat there and roasted for the next two turns of the game and caused the Berserkers and Angron to have to get out and try to walk across the table towards me.
Oh.
And that didn't work.
That's brutal.
Yeah. And then, again, my opponent was rolling just miserably. It was one of those things where it did a bunch of wounds. Like, well, I guess I'll just take him on Angron because he has a 4+ invulnerable save. And then proceeded to fail all of the 4+ invulnerable saves. Oh, no. Saves.
I saw that coming. As soon as you described, like, you started to describe it, it was like, yep, that's just
happening. As soon as you state logic, like, this is the best choice, because logic, dice, we're like, ah.
Yeah, we got
you. That, mate.
We got you.
I don't know. Like, anybody who plays Custodes is probably like, don't do that. You start not making those 4-ups, you have a real bad time.
Yeah, so a bunch of Space Marines, pretty cool. And even with the, you know, they got reactions and all kind of things to do with the dice so sorely not in their favor, they really didn't make it into close combat. So I think, and with the Trios conveyors, actually even further, or I tried to limit the way they can come to me, you know, trying to avoid the vortex blast, their own Land Raider, and my, you know, 1-foot long Trios conveyor. You know, I created, basically bought myself an extra turn or so, and they just couldn't make it across. And, you know, that was the end of that. Turn 3, you know, maybe beginning of turn 4, it was basically all over but the shoot match. And yeah, so AdMech are good, especially when you roll super hot and your opponent doesn't. No. So don't take this as advice. But they got some neat rules, and I think the only drawback with them is that initiative. And if you can figure out the right combination of some shots and when, you know, how you engage, then you should do all right. I don't know that the Atropos is amazing, but I had one and figured why not. Didn't even take him at all. So there's my AdMech report. You got a lot of rules in there. And I think if you're going to play Heresy, you do want to spend a little time reviewing maybe what I've decided what I'm going to do, maybe is more for people out there, is to put like sticky notes, like tab your book, because the books do come with one bookmark, but you want more than that. And I think you want a quick way to index your book that does not slow down the game when you're trying to play.
How do you guys sort of approach learning a new rule set? I am a person who kind of struggles with rules, and I think we've talked about it before, but like, what's your number one tip? You picked up a new rule set. Where do you start?
My first thing is to look for the similarities rather than the differences. I look for how many things are the same to the things I already know. Like, I mean, if it's a brand new game, then, you know, you got to start right at the beginning. But like, if it's an addition change in, you know, 40K or fantasy, we're through one there. I look for the things that are the same. Like, oh yeah, so you still move the same amount of inches. I go through all the basics. Like, yeah, so I still have all the phases the same. Oh, there's a new phase. Cool. I'm going to go learn about that new phase after I go through all the ones I already know and see everything that's the same. Because I can tell you what, from 8th edition to 9th edition, I don't think I cracked that rule book for a while into the edition. Like, I was playing multiple games before I needed to look something up, because I just like flicked through the first time, went like, yep, same, 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 cool, close it, off we go. And then, you know, you refer back to it when you're in a position where something's obviously different. But that's how I go, and that's how I learn best.
So, you know, everybody learns differently, right? Like, someone could say, okay, we'll read the entire rule book. Some people say, you know, read the little primer rule books that they have sometimes, like the demo books. That's just the basic rules. I kind of like, especially as I was looking at things like Kill Team or some of the others, I like demonstrations. I'll read the rules just, but for me, it helps to really to play it, or to see it played out a little bit so I can kind of visualize it better. And so for Kill Team is a good example where Warhammer Plus, they actually have tutorial videos that show like how to play the game, and they go through the different phases, and you can just watch it and watch them play it. And so from there, then it was really good for me to actually play the game. And by doing it hands-on, and I could kind of tell just because of the way the game was going, and then suddenly if I did something wrong, it was apparent to me after, you know, having played so many different games. But doing that and then being able to go back and review was really helpful for me as far as learning a new rule set.
I like to sit down with a book and just flip through, just flip back and forth. And when it gives you if it's one that has a page number reference, just really flipping back and forth. That I prefer doing with a paper book instead of the electronic versions.
Yeah, I do much better when I have a physical book in front of me. I don't know what it is. Maybe like I need that tactile experience to learn. But digital rules are really difficult for me to actually learn from. They're okay for like refreshers once I've already had a sort of grasp with the rules, but I really, really struggle with learning from an electronic copy.
I think figuring out something that makes it, whatever attaches to that sense of permanence helps speed up. Yeah. But with this, to me, I was looking, it's like, man, I'm doing a lot of flipping. Like, what is the singularity canon do? What is the it's got this, and I got to flip to see what's happening with Vortex. I probably need some tabs in this book, and that's going to help me get faster and better. And then, you know, hopefully after a couple of times, you won't necessarily need it. But that was my experience with AdMech. I enjoyed playing them. It was, I'm sure my opponent wished they had a little bit better run of it on their side, but, you know, it's the way the dice be sometimes.
I will go on record numerous times as saying that I do all my best hobby related learning in the bathroom. My rule book usually
the library, the game library.
Book I currently need to learn the most of sits next to the throne, my porcelain throne, and then I write all my best lists in the shower, like because I'll finish, you know, showering, and then I'll like zone out and just write a list while, yeah, under the water. It's, I don't know, it's a mystical place for me, the bathroom.
Let's talk some demons, if we can indulge ourselves and the listeners in this.
One of my biggest gripes with the previous demon book is how unlike greater demons felt, because they felt so easy to remove. You know, I mean, at the start of ninth edition, there were lists where they had a bunch of keepers of secrets and they would run at you and they were really strong. And then as kind of we went to the new level of killing ability that ninth edition seems to have brought in, they fell off really hard, like really hard. Those demons just did not feel very difficult to kill at all. So I'm hopeful that the new like greater demon data sheets have all been revamped and feel good to take.
Yeah, we can talk about some of that. Let's talk about like the detachments, like how you actually build them and maybe some things that people can include them in other armies if they so choose, or other things in this. So there's the demonic allies rule with a demonic pact. And basically, if you include, if you're the inclusion of Legion, Demonica, Agent of Chaos, Khorne units in your army does not prevent World Eaters units in your army from using the rules, so on and so forth. And how you get that is that if your army includes one Legion Demonica detachment and the combined power ratings of all units in that detachment make up no more than 25% of your army's power level, then until the end of the battle, every unit in that detachment gains the Agent of Chaos keyword.
That's cool. So that's similar to what they've done with Brood Brothers for Genestealer Cult. That's actually quite a cool change.
Yeah, I think that's, you get, getting the armies into it. What is it? How does it feel like a chaos thing? Like they're selling the souls in the right way?
Well, it would suck if there was no thematic way or no, you know, sorry, rules way to represent the how thematic it is to have, you know, word bearers and, you know, demons working together, et cetera, et cetera.
There are some restrictions here. If your army only contains Legion Demonica detachments and includes any greater demon units, one of them must be your warlord, unless it also includes Bellicor. Bellicor kind of
trumps it.
The warlord at that. Yep. For each greater demon unit included in this detachment, you can include one herald of the same allegiance keyword in that detachment without the herald unit taking up a battlefield role slot. So if that's trying to get those battalions filled, gives you a little bit of flexibility there. Yeah, I do not mind that. So then I think it might be cool to talk about one of the biggest changes is that, the way the saves works, which you've seen that on the Warhammer community site. But I'd like to point out that it gets like, there's some nuance here is that the demonic invulnerability like instead of a normal save characteristic, and that's save with the capital S, is described in the Warhammer 40,000 book, is that each Legion Demonica data sheet has a demonic save characteristic. And it goes on to say that it has one save versus shooting, one save versus melee, that's the slash, but it's not an invulnerable save or a save. So things that would ignore saves, like armor saves or vulnerable saves, this is neither one of those things.
I think this is a huge piece. They've inserted in a mechanic aspect that has superseded a lot of other elements of the game. And I think that's critical. I think that's very important as you're trying to bring things in and make things distinct or unique, right? And how you go about managing that. So I think it's really awesome that they've gone this direction with it. I know it's another level of complexity, but it's also what, you know, when you pick up demons and you play with them. And I think sometimes, and especially the more recent additions of demons, I think that they've blurred into a lot of other armies and how they played. I wouldn't say that they were the most unique outside of just aesthetics to certain regards. This is a really interesting change, and I can appreciate where they're coming from with its development.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think last week I touted the otherworldly nature and how they demons in 30K in the previous edition felt like they didn't play by the same rules as everybody else. This feels like the 40K extrapolation of that statement. Like, they don't play by the same mechanics. They'll play by the same, you know, rule book, but they're going to be same, same, but different because they're not from the material realm. The rule book we've got was written for the material realm. Here are demons. They're here to do everything a little bit spicy. And I'm absolutely here for it. I think it's a cool change.
I think seeing how other rules interactions are. So I think it's for demon players, if you're playing against an opponent and they manipulate saves, you might need to like do a little, well, let's see what your rule says versus what my rule says and see if that actually matters.
Well, so one of the funny things that a mate of mine said, because I borrowed a Grey Knight army off him and I gave it back to him the other day, and he said, it's going to be really funny when demons come out to see if all the stuff in the Grey Knights Codex gets FAQ'd or altered to ignore demon saves now, because there's a bunch of stuff in there that's supposed to ignore demon invulnerable saves on demon models. So if that all gets FAQ'd, then there's stuff, it's another layer of a little bit of a meme or a little bit of joking around, jesting about how many more layers of nuance and points of difference we must have in this game. But I still think it's pretty funny.
It's going to be neat to see, you know, again, just if the demons can do what they're supposed to do on the tabletop. And, you know, there are some other abilities too. They got the demonic terror, which is not, I don't think, really a new mechanic to them, but enemy units within 6 inches subtract one from the enemy's leadership characteristic and subtract one from any combat attrition test. I think we see that as, like, if you're supposed to be scary, you get these neg ones, like as a thing across different codexes.
Yeah, I'd like to see I'm hopeful there's a way for them to leverage that mechanic, because I'm finding there's so many, well, morale limiting, morale altering or modified mechanics in the game. They just don't come up as much as I want them to. So I'm hoping they can make some mileage out of this.
It's tough because the leadership manipulation is, it's existed in the game for what, I don't know, 15 years or something now, is something, but it's either not good enough or too good. It seems to be real hard to find that like perfect thing. But then it also plays into the fact that, like, we talk a bunch about tournament list, and people's tournament list don't often include things that are easy manipulatable in this phase of the game. It may come up a lot in more casual games.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, Custodes with their, you know, leadership 11 across the board, Tyranids just not caring at all. A bunch of single model units that are becoming quite prevalent. I mean, the best example of that being Knights, where you've just got an army of single model units. There's no chance of a single model fleeing. It's either dead or not dead. So there are a bunch of armies that just don't make the morale phase matter, I suppose. And so I'm hoping they've got other ways to leverage it. Like, you know, psychic abilities, warp storm abilities that say, oh, you must take a test against your leadership. Or if we roll hard in your leadership, you can't overwatch, or, you know, you half movement, stuff of that ilk. Like something that makes these modifiers mean more than just, do you fail your morale test at the end of the turn?
Yeah, so there are. I'm glad you brought up the Warp Storm. That's another big thing, is that the Warp Storm is meant different things over the years, but now you accumulate Warp Storm points, and at the start of each battle round, you can make a Warp Storm roll. To do so, roll 8d6, you know, one for each point of the star, I guess, and for each 4+, gain 1 Warp Storm point, or WSP for short, as they have in here.
Oh, they actually put that in. I thought that was a TPM special.
No. It's referenced. It's kind of weird. Is that they go on to say 1 Warp Storm point or WSP, but then you know that you don't see that in the rest of the description. But you know
that's good as
so. But it is in the actual description of the things. Like it'll say 5 WSP, 3 SP. That's how they denote it in the codex as when they're describing each one of the effects. And there are a couple that do this. So there's a section for each faction. Undivided, Khorne, Nurgle, Tzeentch, Slaanesh, and one of them in the Undivided section is for 3 Warp Storm points, uses the effect at the start of a turn, very important, until the end of the turn, while the enemy unit is within range of the Demonic Terror ability, one or more of the units of your army, subtract 1 from the leadership characteristic of the models in that unit. So you start to see how it starts to stack up for the leadership manipulation, you know, if it comes up. There are some, here's a 5 WSP thing here, the Dark Invigoration. Use this effect at the start of the morale phase. While 1 model in each Legion Demonic unit from your army can regain up to D3 lost wounds. If every model in that unit has a wound characteristic of 1, that unit can instead be replenished. When the unit is replenished, you can return D3 destroyed models to that unit with their full wounds remaining. Each return model no longer counts as having been destroyed for the purposes of morale test this turn. Each unit can only be replenished once per turn.
That's cool. I like that a lot.
Then each faction has things like a 4 Warp Storm point for WSP. Use this effect at the start of the fight phase until the end of the phase. Each time a Legion Demonic Nurgle unit from your army makes a melee attack, add 1 to the attack's hit roll.
So that's just army wide, yeah. That's just my army is just a better army.
Yeah.
Now.
Each time a Legion Demonic and Nurgle model from your army makes a melee attack,
that's really cool. Yeah. And so they've got god specific traits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's elegant. So is that like a mono god? Like, do you have to be of a single god to get that, or just having any god?
No, it's if your army includes any Legion Demonic detachments, it's detachments, so I mean you mix it up or whatever, in which every unit has the Nurgle keyword. So it's not the detachment has to be fully Nurgle to open it up for you, but you could have potentially multiple detachments of different gods.
That's cool. That's very cool.
It's just too bad you can't have 4 detachments.
With this, the Warp Storm stuff, there are ways in the book to gain additional Warp Storm points and also bank Warp Storm points from turn to turn.
That's right, because you lose them at the end of the turn, right? Unless you've got a way to bank them.
Yeah, and there are abilities in the book to allow to bank it. So if that's important to you, you build strategies around them, the book allows for that to happen.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I do like this next one, you know, talk a little about Nurgle. And I will say, as someone, I built and painted Herodagus. I did not magnetize him up to be all the different demons. So I did immediately flip to the Herodagus page and check him out. Turns out he's okay. It's pretty good. Playable. There are ways to like increase the, if you're checking vehicles, which there are a lot of things, but the vehicle keyword in the rule book for 2 Warp Storm points can increase the AP, the attack by 1. For Nurgle, which is cool.
Very important. That's the thing that like all the way through 8th edition, they always struggled with as well, right? And in 9th edition, it's been the same. Nurgle's doesn't have much AP to swing around. Lots of attacks, usually poisoning really well or having rerolls to wound, but the AP was never there. So that's probably really important.
Jumping around to Slaanesh, they have a lightning speed for 3 WSP. Use this effect in your movement or charge phase until the end of the turn. Each time an advance or roll of a charge is made for Legion Demonica Slaanesh, unit in your army, add 1 to the result. So getting +1 to charge for 3 free points.
Easy money.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about like learning the rules, I kind of see this as almost like an ablative command point CP total that you just kind of have on another D12.
Well, it's very similar. We've seen this a couple of times now. Like units having their own like resource management bonus. I mean, the first one I think we saw was the Cabal points for T-Sons, and now we've got Fate Dice, Miracle Dice. Now these ones. So I'm here for it. I think it's a cool little mechanic.
Yeah, I think you just see how much, you know, gas you get in your tank at each round. then you know, I don't think it's necessarily with 8 dice on a 4+. I should say that there's going to be plenty of rounds when you don't get any WSBs, you know. But it seems like you could actually work into your strategy of having 3 or 4 of these, and then, you know, plan on what you can do with them, you know. And then on the off chat, you roll 5 or 6, then you just kind of live in those halcyon, the salad days of the warp storm, and
salad days.
Get to work. There's a going the corn side, just kind of spreading the love around. The overwhelming rage started the opponent's movement phase. Each time an enemy unit, excluding aircraft, comes within engagement range of any demonic corn unit, or your army's units from your army is selected to fall back. On a 4+, the unit cannot fall back.
Awesome, and that's just army wide.
Yeah. Okay. Of any Legion Demonica corn unit, they're trying to fall back.
Okay.
Nice.
So you pick the turn, you get into like 5 or 6 different pivotal combats, and yeah, just be like, well, run the gauntlet, see how many can fall back, mate, because one of them is going to stick. Yeah, I like that a lot. Gives a lot of agency on the planning front, because you'll get to see how many you've got, or you'll get to hold on to them in your turn. Is it the start of the battle round or start of your turn you generate them?
If every unit from your army has a Legion Demonica keyword, excluding models with the Agents of Chaos, an aligned keyword at the start of each battle round, you can make a Warp Storm roll.
So if they're going first, you still roll. You still roll immediately on the top of their turn every turn. So yeah, this is cool. You always know how many you've got. In their turn, your turn, you won't have to. Yeah, you don't have to plan ahead. It's the best way. Sick. I like it.
There's ways to work. You can get +1 attack to everybody in the army. Like,
who would have thought? Shocked.
Which, I mean, shocked. When you take into account, I mean, Bloodletters went from 1 attack to 2 attacks now, and then you start bringing in all these other little things. I think that the Khorne units, very much like the World Eaters, have this ability to ramp up drastically to go from this, you know, kind of, I'll say, base level of Blender Machine unit to really just turning it up to 11. Once you stack all these different things on top of it.
Zinch has got some good stuff here too. The Deluge of Fire for 4 WSPs increased the weapon skill. I'm sorry, ballistic skill.
Was that 2 words or 1 word, that name?
Deluge of Fire.
Deluge. Please tell me it's 1 word. Please tell me it's 1 word.
It's all 1 word. It's hyphenated. No.
It's a new take blender.
Take a left at the Deluge of Fire, you know?
Sorry, continue.
Forget that I'm sometimes, you know, it's late and I'm from Georgia. Rampant Mutation is another one. I didn't expect to see something like this in the Zinch thing. So it's 3 WSP. Use this effect in the fight phase until the end of the phase each time a Legion Demonica Zinch model from your army makes a melee attack. An unmodified wound roll of 6 inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage. Here's the caveat here is that an enemy unit can only suffer 3 mortal wounds per phase.
Oh, it's only 3.
But that's each unit. Not that you can only do 3, but it's like if you were engaged in, you know, 5 different units, you could dish out 15 mortal wounds over the course of that.
It's actually true, yeah. Mm. You don't, when you hear about these things, you just think your context is like a stratagem, like this is on 1 unit, but this is like could possibly be army wide.
Yeah. If you lined it up, I mean, it's like biggity bam here going with this rampant mutation. And this is really good defensively is what I think about, because, you know, you're playing horrors or something and you don't want to be charged, but inevitably that will happen. You're like, okay, you got me, and now let me dig myself out here with this rampant mutation. I mean, we don't see a lot of charges where 5 units are charging, you know, 5 different units on the tabletop, but, you know, it could happen. I like it that these are uncapped, just like you said. Well, capped on the wounds, but it's uncapped on if your units are in the situation to take advantage of this, then it could be completely army wide for you. And that part is strong.
The part is very strong.
So let's talk about, we talked about some awesome things. Let's talk about some things that I don't know how longtime demon players are going to take this.
So that's something, you know, I mean, before we jump in, the locusts, right? The locusts of the last edition, that didn't come up, right? We didn't see that one. And so, like, right out the gate, it's just understanding. It doesn't have to be, it's look at Sisters, right? The transition from what we knew, like even Sisters at release of their actual codex, not talking about White Dwarf Sisters, but to the next edition of Sisters, and there's still things that have kept them on the table. And so I guess I'm going with a disclaimer that a new codex, a new edition, the models are the same in certain regards, but the rules may very well be drastically different. And I think that that's okay. But I know how frustrating
it's going to take some adjustment, right? I mean, it's just one of those things. There are things. And each one of these, each one of the Pantheon's factions has a setup of, you know, it's got the kit. It has some extra points you can spend. Like there's Exalted Bloodthirsters. There's no longer like the Bloodthirster of what is it? Inclement Weather.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, inclement weather, good. Yeah. Inclement weather, mildly upset, and slightly and perturbed.
Bum tum tums.
His fur backwards. Yeah.
So I think what I was taking from what Red was saying was that maybe sometimes the change is kind of like a parallel change along the power kind of spectrum, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
If you're expecting to take your army, you know, right back out of the case and put it right back on the table, that's probably not going to happen. But again, maybe it will. But we'll talk about that in just one second. But the kits, you know, as far as like what you get some special abilities that you can beef up some of your characters, you know, some of the greater demons. And you spend extra points the same way you upgrade like a Master of Sanctity and that kind of stuff. And then each arm or each faction has its own stratagems and its own relics. And in some cases, you know, like psychic powers. So you got all that stuff. And so plenty of flavor in there. But where I was going with I think one of the biggest changes is that the demon troop squads, like a bloodletter squad, a plague bearer squad, so on and so forth, are capped at 10 models each.
Woof. So,
no more 30 demon squads.
Oh, dear.
And that may not be a terrible thing, but you know, one of the things that we talk about is value and efficiency of stratagems. And we were just talking about like value of how the Warp Storm is so cool because it's extra points that you get that applies to your whole army. So maybe this whole thing about, oh no, my Banner of Blood only affects 10 bloodletters now instead of 30 might not really be a big deal, but it's one of those changes on the first read that makes you like, oh crap, got to pump the brakes. It's a different world.
Why were people bringing big squads of troops in the Demon Codex anyway?
Oh man. I mean, it is not just because it was kind of iconic to the demonic horde aspect, but in gameplay wise, I mean, there was a mechanic, and we go back to this, right? The mechanic has adjusted or changed. The older edition had it where if you had 20 or more models, you got an additional bonus depending on which, like, you had, right? So, like, 20 or more plague bearers were -1 to hit. 20 or more bloodletters were +1 to hit. And so, like, you were always trying to have these larger units. The book literally inspired you as someone playing the army at the time to have larger blocks of units so you could capitalize on those benefits. And now it sounds like we're going in same models, but a very different direction.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. If it even, because I haven't built a list with this, like with all the changes, to figure out exactly if I feel like I've got everything I need, you know, seeing this in his final book form, you know, but it's one of those to where longtime players are going to look at that and go, I've got to make alterations. And so I think that's a good thing though, because you can kind of look at it with almost like fresh eyes, knowing that things are going
to
be different.
So Red was spot on. In 8th edition, there was a huge incentive to take fatty units of lesser demons. It was a cornerstone of the last book. And so remains to be seen, but I'm really hoping there's a cornerstone, like a 10 man, 10 demon, 10 demonette, 10 whatever, is a cornerstone of this book because it's incentivized. What I would have loved to have seen, and it could be in here that I just haven't heard of yet, and I'm pretty sure I would have if it was, Paul would have probably shouted it from the rooftops in that same sentence. But remember the Drukhari book when you could take 20 witches? But if you upgraded them, you could take 10 blood brides, or the same for, you know, Kabbalites and Trueborn, etc., Hamoxites and Rax. be cool if they had something around the corner that was like, yeah, you can upgrade a Unalesser Demons to take 20 of them with some extra stuff. That would be a nice little elegant change. If there is uproar about this, you know, and G-Dub was conscious of it, they could be like, all right, we'll just slot this in.
Some of the other units, I think, like, we're talking about Fiends of Slaanesh here, maybe after the break. They're great. Adam, I think you in the pre-show, you were talking about Skull Cannon of Khorne.
Oh, I think the Skull Cannon's awesome. I think the Skull Cannon's phenomenal. If you want to jump into it,
yeah. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about some of these like more elite and stuff like that.
Yeah.
One second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com, and don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everybody, bathing in the fires of the Eye of Terror.
So am I the only one here that doesn't really have a Chaos army?
Yeah, probably, I think so. Yeah. I don't know, Adam, do you have Chaos?
No, he does. Angels, he has baby. Dark Angels. Oh man.
No, you will be denied at the gate. I will gatekeep my own trader jokes. Thank you very much.
Oh, man. That was been too many. That's unscripted.
Man, that's freaking, yeah. Okay, I'm 3.5 years of playing Dark Angels. I just got to have those boxing gloves ready to go. I just got to get that first hit in every time. Because as soon as I do, everyone stops.
But it's yourself. Yeah, I know. I know, like, the people don't want to beat up on the guy who just hit himself.
Right? Exactly, like... right.
So let's talk about the...
It's actually part of the reason I'm playing Traitor Dark Angels in Heresy. It's because everyone will just have to shut up.
So going to Slaanesh and talking a bit about that is that, you know, we talked about the smaller squad size and that demonettes, you know, it can't be 30 demonettes anymore. It's got to be 10. But they're neck 2 AP, you know, one on the piercing claws, one damage piece.
Legitimately a lot better.
Don't hate that at all. And then Fiends of Slaanesh, their claws are neg 2 AP, 2 damage apiece. And they got 4 awesome. Attacks. Piece.
Awesome.
Movement 14.
And I'm assuming like it's Slaanesh. There's probably a way to advance and charge, right?
They do got some abilities. And I also want to talk about one of the stratagems that they have for the fiends. They have Melodic Delirium. Use a stratagem at the start of your opponent's psychic phase. Select one fiend unit from your army until the end of the phase. The unit has the following ability. While an enemy psyker is within 12 inches of this unit, each time a psychic test is taken for that unit, subtract 2 from the result.
Subtracting 2 is pretty sick.
Yeah, we already know. Everybody knows that one player can barely roll a 7 on a good day.
I feel attacked.
It is one of those to where like 7s seem impossible. 9s you see could do all day. You know.
Yeah. Yep.
But that neg 2, that's you know, it's going to be terrible, especially when it's 12-inch. 12-inch aura is 20. That's half the table. With one Fiend of Slaanesh.
Yeah. Well, with a 14-inch move, it's just 26-inch threat range on your minus 2.
I think that is going to be some seriously bad news for a lot of players because it's not one unit. You don't target a unit with that. It's anybody within 12 inches gets that neg 2 for one command point. And I think that is like guaranteed expenditure if you're playing. Like we talk, you know, in some other shows about what do you save a CP in your back pocket for? And this is it.
Well, you play against T-Sons and they just have every turn of the game, instead of just having cast something, they have to spend a CP to cast something. That's just value.
Yeah. And that also counts for like psychic actions and stuff, right? So maybe you're taking away points from them.
Hmm?
I don't hate that ability.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. So the Skull Cannon. You may never have heard of this model. You may never have seen this model in the flesh because you never had any reason to before. I think they might be cherry freaking ripe right now. Because they're 100 points at toughness 7 with 9 wounds and a 4+ invulnerable save, and their gun actually does stuff now. Have you got it there for us, Paul?
Yeah, and so I like the fact that you point out they're basically 9 wounds, they don't degrade, and then being on toughness 7, hitting on a 3+ with the ballistic skill. The Skull Cannon is a 48-inch range weapon, D3+3, strength 8, neg 2 AP, 2 damage, blast. And each time an attack is made with this weapon, the target does not receive the benefits of cover against that attack.
There's the kicker. If it was just AP 2, it would be kind of, it's good into some stuff, kind of bad into power armor, well, armor, contempt power armor. With that ignores cover, in addition, it's actually quite good because it wounds Marines on 2s and they'll get a 4+. D3 plus 3 means a minimum of 4 shots, up to 6 shots as well. Bliss skill 3+ is pretty good also. So you'll average 5 shots. Theoretically, should average 3 hits, possibly 3 wounds, a couple of dead space marines. But this thing is only 100 points, like I said, and it's no slouch in combat either.
Oh, well, yeah, it's Khorne, right? It's
kind of what you expect. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
It's a little battle.
It's the same reasons that on the Thursday show, me and Paul did together, we've actually been seeing a lot more Venom Crawlers pop up in Chaos Space Marine list, because it offers a little bit of shooting, a little bit of combat for a good price point, and does a little bit of something else as well. This is a very comparable unit. It does a little bit of everything, and that is actually quite rare to have in a Demon's Army, when usually things are very specialized. Horrors can only shoot. Bloodletters only chop, etc., etc. So having something that even functions in 2 phases well is quite rare, and I think quite valuable.
I mean, it's not that it's a juggernaut. You see what I did there? In combat. But the Biting Maw that it has, attendant Hellblades or whatever, they're Malefic 4. So we didn't talk about Malefic does, but it basically gives them extra attacks.
Yeah, Malefic 4 is how many attacks they make with that profile, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a cool little trick. And I'm assuming they've called it Malefic because they have rules and ways to buff that function, right?
Yes.
Like your Malefic 4s become Malefic 5s.
Are malefic weapons, such as weapon will have the ability that reads malefic, and then a value such as 2 or 4. Each time the bearer fights, it makes a number of additional attacks with that weapon equal to that value. And there's some more rules, but you get the idea. Extra attacks with that weapon, so not bad. The bloodletters are toughness 4. I can't remember if they were toughness 4 before.
No, that's a change. Nah, that's they buff. Were toughness 3.
So that is pretty good. 2 attack space,
which
3
is
attacks.
Actually a buff as well. Only one attack before.
I know we jumped from the Skull Cannon to the Bloodletters, but the Hellblade is neg 3 AP, damage 2, which is pretty much where you want to be in today's world. Neg 3, of course, getting around armor, contempt to 2 damage.
Absolutely right. I'm a big fan. But please tell me, Greater Demons, give me a profile worthy of a Chaos God.
Sure. Well, okay, let's start. I'm here in the Khorne section. Let's go with a Bloodthirster. Movement 12, 20 wounds, 8 attacks.
Oof. Toughness?
Toughness 8.
Ugh, okay.
Strength 8.
Okay.
Demonic save, 4-4. So it's got a 4 in close combat and a 4 against shooting.
So, wait. So it's 20 wounds, toughness 8 with a 4+ invuln.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, no. It does not have a 4+ invulnerable save. It has a 4+ demonic save. Against shooting.
Yeah.
And a 4+ demonic save against close combat.
It's just got a 4+. And that's really good. That's better than a knight. Knight has, 6 more wounds, but has a 5+ save that you cannot change, and doesn't even have that save in combat. So, like any decent rend, a knight is worse, I believe, than a bloodthirster. And I mean, who knows how many points a bloodthirster is? But sorry,
110 points.
It's got okay. So it's 100 points less than a knight, possibly more durable than knight. Okay, we're starting to get somewhere. How many attacks? Please tell me it's 8.
It is 8, yeah.
All is right with the world. give me a weapon profile. I don't care which one. Just give me one.
Okay, we'll go with the Lash of Khorne. That's the Assault 6, 12-inch range, like it's a little flamer kind of thing that it does. 2 damage apiece.
Nice.
So they come with Hellfire Breath and the Great Axe of Khorne. You can sub out the Great Axe for... one of the Blood Flail and a Lash of Khorne, or an Axe of Khorne.
Oh, so that's how you get your differentiation. Instead of having your Exalted or Super Angry or, woke up on the wrong side of the bed, Bloodthirster, you've got just different weapon options.
Yeah. Yeah. And
cool.
Yeah, they do slightly different things. The Great Axe is not terrible. It's got the Mighty Strike, which times 2 strength, neg 4 AP, D3 plus 3 damage. But then the Axe of Khorne gives you a Mighty Strike of just D6 damage, so a little more variable there. And then both of them have the sweeping profile, but the sweeping blow on the Axe of Khorne that, again, frees you up for that second hand weapon is only 1 damage, whereas the Mighty Strike for the Great Axe is 2 damage.
Praise be the sweep attack profile. There was nothing quite as silly as a Bloodthirster charging 10 guardsmen and having no way to kill 10. Like, just it was impossible for him to kill 10 guardsmen. It was pretty funny. But now, is it 2 attacks per or 3 attacks per on the sweep?
Two hits each Yeah, per
good.
Attack.
Good. Having 24 attacks would probably be too much. 16 attacks is pretty good.
Seems right. I did misrepresent the Lash of Khorne, even though it's a 12-inch. The Hellfire Breath is, of course, the flamer weapon that hits automatically. You have to roll to hit with the Lash of Khorne.
I'm excited. Starbrand.
And, you know, I know I mentioned Rodigus, so we might as well talk about Rodigus for a second, jump into Nurgle if that's okay. 24 wounds on him, toughness 9, with a 5+, 4+.
Save. Sorry, say again. What was that toughness?
9.
9.
Excuse me? Yeah, boy.
All great unclean ones have toughness 9.
Fantastic. So not just Rodigus. Good. Yeah. That's only a good thing.
Yeah, I mean they're beefy. I think the greater demons kind of do what they're supposed to do. They are great. They are demons. You will see them in list now. Whereas I think they were kind of optional before, and maybe they're not auto includes, but they. I don't think you'll go wrong putting them in your list.
Are they still real slow?
The great unclean ones.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But they. So that's something though. Like in contrast. So what's their movement? If you don't mind saying.
Oh yeah. No problem. Yeah, let me get there. 7 inches for the great unclean ones.
I mean that's okay. So that's 7. But what's the keeper of secrets? Watch this, Tanya. This is gonna. It's crazy. Real quick.
Put me through the paces here.
Sorry.
No. It's,
you gotta tab those pages.
16.
Oh boom. Baby.
So that's something, I mean, it was in the Warhammer community articles, I think, but showing off Slaanesh models and their stat lines, it's ridiculous. The amount of movement they have, they are fast. They are really fast. It is remarkable how quick. I mean, 16 inches on that one, it doesn't fly, so it is somewhat limited that way, but still, you go into some of the others, I mean, even the Demonettes, I want to say it's quite surprising how far all these models are going to move.
Demonettes move 10 inches.
Ooh.
10 inches. That's crazy.
Didn't they move 7?
They were 7 before. Yeah. And they could advance and charge before, like it was a built-in thing. I think it's a warp storm aspect now. And so, I mean, moving 10 inches is just, that's bonkers. I mean, I think the seekers move 16 inches as
they
well.
They do, 16, yeah.
I mean, that is a fast-moving attachment right there.
Why do I feel like my husband is going to be so excited about this? He is such a, like, fast, aggressive playstyle. I think he's going to bring out all his keepers against me. Oh, no.
Yeah, so lightning speed is the warp storm thing that you were mentioning, is that uses effect in the movement or charge phase until the end. That's just to add the +1. Yeah, so not the advance and charge, but...
I mean, when you move 16 inches, do you need to advance and charge?
That's a great point.
Right. I mean, that's absolutely a consideration.
So I mentioned there are ways to buff up each of the greater demons, you know, in the same way. And one of them is Insatiable Onslaught, which is add 2 to the advance and charge rolls made for the model. And that is only a 20-point upgrade. So one of those greater demons moving, I don't know, what would we say, 1,000 inches across the table, 18 inches, and then charging with a +2. Gonna be real hard to get away, and that's one of the things, you know, like one of the infernal knights that I was talking about. They can move 17 inches when you take a couple of wounds. You only have to take wounds for this. And they don't get a +2 to charge, and you'd already get turn 1 charges off on the regular. It's gonna change how people deploy, or it should change. Or they'll change the second game. I'll say that.
Okay, so are there any other sort of little demons that got a pretty huge glow up? We know that the Beasts of Nurgle got a huge glow up because we saw that on Warhammer Community. Was there anything else?
Get your Beast of Nurgle now. Like, if you don't have, if you play Nurgle and don't have a complement of a couple of different Beasts of Nurgle, I think that you're probably going to want them. And that's because if you leave a wounded model there, it heals itself back up. And this is a 7-wound model. So you could undo a lot of work. You know, getting through a toughness 6, 7-wound model with a 4+ demonic save from shooting, and then have that all come back is, could be demoralizing.
You're going to have to overcommit to those to remove them.
Yeah, see how many points they are apiece. And we can also talk about the Plague Bearers, because the Plague Bearers, 2 attacks apiece.
Nice.
2 wounds apiece.
Nice.
Not a joke. But the Beast of Nurgle are 80 points apiece, so kind of pricey, but I think worth it.
Well, didn't like every single stat in their stat line get better pretty much?
Strength 6, movement 6, weapon skill 4+, toughness 6, 7 wounds, 6 attacks, and then leadership 7 if that matters. But 5 up, 4 up. And then they have putrid appendages, which is -2 AP, 2 damage. Each time an attack is made with this weapon, an unmodified hit roll of 6 inflicts 2 mortal wounds on the target, and the attack sequence ends. So you get through some good burst damage. I mean, don't forget, these have 6 stacks apiece.
Can we also talk about how, like, that they have one of the best named rules in the game? Because the rule that they heal up any wounds that were done to them is called Gooey Demise.
That's when it explodes. Grotesque regeneration is...
Yeah, I was like, they actually put gooey inside of a rule. This is fantastic.
Now, Gooey Demise is the, yeah, each time a model in this unit is destroyed, roll 1d6, and on a 6 it explodes and is
so funny.
One mortal wound within 3 inches, yeah.
So great.
Yeah, the Plague Bearers, -2 AP, 1 damage apiece, and then each unmodified hit roll of 6 automatically wounds the target, and they have 2 attacks apiece base.
So I am playing Nighthaunt in Age of Sigmar, and they all have auto wound on hits of sixes, and it's actually really powerful. So to have that on your core troops, I think is going to be chef's kiss good.
It does seem pretty good. And then going to we talked about the Khorne ability to not fall back. There is a Nurgle stratagem called the Slime Trail, and select one Beast of Nurgle or Hordika Slimix. Each time an enemy unit excluding aircraft within engagement range of that unit is selected to move, roll a d6 on a 4+, the enemy cannot fall back this turn.
Mm. Nice.
Army-wide, right?
No, that's a single.
Oh, single. Okay, yeah, that one's single.
That's a stratagem. That's a command point expenditure, not the Warp Storm. Mm-hmm. The other one was a Warp Storm ability.
Okay.
I have a question. How easy is it to bring a variety of different types? Like, can you intermix? Like,
if you take Bellicorg, it's a lot easier. Otherwise, you're dealing with just single detachments, I think you have to.
Yeah, it's just because hearing all of the units by themselves, you're thinking like, oh, well, like if I take this Khorne unit and I take this Slaanesh unit, there's like synergy there. But in a lot of cases, you can't bring them in the same detachment, so you have to spend more command points. Is that still?
Yeah.
It's still going to be a problem.
Yeah, it'll be some list choices. I think that will be outside of a disciples list. You'll see some like, I don't say mono builds, but some very designed and singularly themed lists.
Okay, but how many points is Bellicor?
Bellicor is 420 points. I believe that to be the same as he is currently if someone's a Bellicor player.
Huh. So he's like a pretty hefty chunk of your army, but yeah,
he got his own psychic powers too. He got his own tree.
But if he allows you to intermingle or easily take like the different god units, and that might be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you want. I don't know a lot of demon players that don't kind of throw in with their lot with, I'd be interested to hear from players out there that do like to mix the demons or the factions in general like that.
Mm-hmm.
See how that goes. I'm going to see what kind of list are built. I'm curious to see how players react with their armies when this book gets out into folks' hands. Because, you know, we talked about some of the changes, or at least some of the things that like might give you pause. But I believe there to be a fair amount in here that does interact favorably with what we see, you know, it in the ranks of organized play. Specifically Slaanesh. I think Slaanesh is going to be really good.
I mean, I think that we kind of saw that with Chaos Space Marines and Emperor's Children too. And I think that Slaanesh just, it has that speed that I think appeals to a lot of folks. And when you consider what demonettes can do moving that quick, much less any of the other units, I mean, there's a lot of power that can be delivered. And, you know, you could bring in other detachments as a support or auxiliary, but really it's going to be how quick that Slaanesh detachment gets to whatever you want it to across the board, and then what it does with it. I mean, it's got some significant advantages.
I only have 10 demonettes in my collection right now. It's gonna be a long time before I can
just say time to change that up.
No, I will stick to my Nurgle. That's I do think that you can make a compelling argument for all of these units and things like the Pink Horrors. You know, they split. Yeah. When we talk about units and size or whatever, Horrors, you know, might be pretty appealing because you may end up with a larger unit.
I will say that I do think that if there was 30 Horror units, that would be really hard to deal with if they just keep splitting and splitting. Wait, do you still have to pay points to split them?
I don't see that as part of this. I think it just happens now.
Oh, thank goodness that you can't take 30 horror units.
Yeah. Yeah, exploding horrors. While this unit only contains blue horrors or brimstone models, the unit cannot perform. Oh, so you can't perform actions if you only have blue or brimstones.
Mm.
And it uses objectives or loses objective secured. And then the split. Each time an enemy unit shoots or fights, after resolving the attacks, if any pink horrors, iridescent horrors, or blue horror models in this unit were destroyed as a result of those attacks, but this unit was not destroyed, make a split roll. For each destroyed model, to make a split roll, roll a d6, and a 4+, that model splits. If a pink horror or iridescent horror model splits, you can add up to 2 blue horrors models to this unit. This can increase the size of the unit above the starting strength and does not change the unit's power rating. If a blue horror splits, add 1 brimstone.
That's really interesting, actually. Like, the mechanic changed a lot. I'm not sure how I feel about it not being a guaranteed thing, because, you know,
you got to bring those models and just hope for the best.
Yeah. But at the same time, you don't have to, like, you can use all your points efficiently, right? You don't have to save points in your army list in order to do this. So I think that it's probably a parallel change. I like it, though. I think it'll be useful.
Well, I know there's a lot to talk about in this book, and we have barely scratched the surface. So after it gets out there and kind of people start to think about it, I would love to hear what demon players. We may even have a demon player on the show as a segment that's been doing a lot of work with demons over the last couple of years in the tournaments, and be interested to see how they adapt their list. And for the hobby segment, I kind of actually like to talk about how to paint demons for a minute, because they have a lot of textures that maybe people are not familiar with painting. Especially if you're going to that ethereal look of things. And I want to talk about something a little controversial
in the
segment, is that the tutorials are changing a little bit, and where they might have recommended Agrax Earthshade for something, now they're recommending one of the new paints.
What paint is that?
So here, let me bring it up with the, like, no longer, you know, as null and oil, like null and oil doesn't do necessarily the same thing. As it did under in the, I actually do like it. It gives you a little bit more of a defined type stuff. But if you're going for that all over coat, then you're looking at a little bit different paints, or at least for is what it seems like.
I mean, I'm not going to say that I didn't go out and buy a whole bunch of the old washes when I heard that things were changing.
Well, I mean, yeah, I actually think if you have an existing color scheme, then
I do.
It is, yeah, it's completely worth it to do that. And then things like the Agrax Earthshade and everything still exist, but it's, you know, slightly different formulas with the different pot release that happened a little bit of time ago. I think it's the Gagarax Sewer is kind of the one that's jumping in as the Agrax replacement.
I'm just gonna complain for my colorblind
Rattling
friends
Grime.
Out there.
I'm sorry. Rattling Grime is the one I think is jumping in there as a replacement. But go ahead, sorry.
I understand that they need to trademark these names, but these names don't tell our colorblind friends anything about what color is inside that pot.
That's an interesting. Yeah, you're right on that.
So I'm just going to complain on behalf of all of our colorblind friends out there, which is about 25% of our male hobby friends. There should be some sort of resource for them if they want to continue making these paint names, that they can actually see, okay, this is a mid-tone warm brown shade, something like that. That should be somewhere.
I gotta plug
or something like
in
that.
The app, if you go into the Citadel paint app, you can, it will tell you based on like model or faction color scheme, you can find the name of it, what's there.
Right, but does it tell you what it is?
No, it will point to the specific point on the model and say, if you want to replicate this, then this is the color that the pot that you get, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so I think,
but there's a lot of colorblind folks who really want to get creative with their stuff. And I know a lot of them ask their friends or partners to, like, tell them, what is this color, right? So then they can go and experiment outside of, like, the box art. So, anyway. That's cool. Just, I just want to put it out there. GW, if you're listening, it would be really easy to put into the app what the colors are. So it's just my tip to you for accessibility.
Basilicum Gray is the, like, the Nolan Oil sub in now. In the tutorials. So it's an interesting thing to get. I'm only pointing this out. If you're looking to replicate some of those effects that you're not getting from the new formulas, these other things seem to work in a similar fashion, give you that all over shade. So with the like plague bearers, my recipe for that, and I'll keep it brief, is Athonian camo shade. I haven't talked about Athonian camo shade
in a while. Great wash.
And over Celestial Gray and Athonian Camo Shade, you get a grimy green-brown, which is a great color for plague bearers and Nurgle and stuff. And then you can do all the pustules and the bubos and that kind of stuff. You know, I try to go with a quick base coat of the Averlin Sunset. You can build it up as bright and as angry and as, you know, nasty as you want it from that. But I like to make the sores seem inflamed and angry, like it's... if you saw someone, you know, with that affliction, you would want to ask them if they're okay and get them some ointment, you know, get them something cooling and soothing. You know,
have you ever tried putting like a watered down purple wash over top of it?
Oh yeah. So only in certain areas though. The way it goes, but doing the greater demons where there's a lot of that flesh on a great unclean one, and maybe I can see this going on to Beast and Urgle too, where you want some variation. Purple goes real well with that. And this is a long way of saying that on the pink horrors and things that are made of just things like warp flame or whatever, the contrast paints are excellent with just a little bit of thinning on them. And I don't even use the contrast medium. I use water for most of this stuff. And it makes painting the skin a breeze. You can get, I was going to say a unit of 30, but those don't exist anymore. You can get through 30 of them, 3 units of 10. You get your troop section locked down in an afternoon.
It looks so good, honestly. Like, contrast looks so good on sort of natural or fantasy kind of things. I'm not a huge fan of it on power armor, personally, unless you do a lot of extra work on it. But anything that has sort of like a skin or cloth kind of texture, the contrast looks really good on.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, these demons, you know, with just a little bit of technique, I don't want to say talent, but a little bit of technique, you can get them tabletop ready, battle ready, get you those 10 points. Don't let that be the limiting factor. It is. You can do it, and the talent is in the bottle in a lot of circumstances.
Liquid talent.
Yeah. Well, that's the show for this week. Again, we scratched the surface a bit on the demons, but I think there's a lot here for aspiring chaos.
Yeah, there's no like, you know, one build. There's no one like it. It has to be this. I don't think that the chaos gods are necessarily like. I'm happy to see that Khorne does feel like it's got some competitive edges to it. It's not just automatically relegated to the back seat because it doesn't have psychic powers. So I think it's great. I think it's an awesome layout.
There will be more to come. So we'll get some more demon coverage next week. It's been a pleasure talking with y'all. Adam had to run. That's why he's not here with us here at the very end. But appreciate his contribution. And Tanya and Red, y'all as well.
Thank you.
We'll see y'all next week.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Leave 5-star reviews. Like, share, subscribe.
Bye, t-shirt.
Hit all the buttons.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.